The following program is paid for by its sponsors, who are solely responsible for its content. Views expressed are not necessarily the views of WMAL.
The information provided on Dr. Tom Rozelle Live by Dr. Tom Rozelle, D.C., interview guests, show co-hosts, or substitute hosts is not intended or implied to be a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. It is for general information purposes only. Information from this broadcast should not replace the appropriate consultation and examination process by a licensed physician. Always consult your own physician prior to changing any current medical directive or prescription.
Dr. Tom Rozelle Live, right now, on 105.9 FM WMAL.
And welcome to Dr. Tom Rozelle Live. We are live sort of in studio on this normal, rainy kind of first day of November, and we are here to talk about things that you have questions on, things to help out with natural medicine. And this is Dr. Stephanie Pina, naturopath and acupuncturist at the Rozelle Center for Healing, filling in for Dr. Rozelle, who is also doing some teaching and training this weekend. And live, we're here to take your phone calls and also to talk about different topics that we talk about a lot and different things that we see in the office, outside of the office, but we're here to answer your questions and also to discover different tools and keys so we learn to know how the body works a little bit better and understand what might be going on with us and the different ways to treat it, mental, emotionally, biochemically, and structurally. And no better person to help me along with this topic for today, and the topic's going to be myofascial networks, is Dr. Harlan Browning. Dr. Browning, good morning.
Hey, good morning. Afternoon. Great to be here.
So your topic for this upcoming Wednesday webinar is going to be myofascial networks, and that's going to be on Wednesday, November 4th at 7 p.m. And anyone who is willing to, wants to listen to this, we are going to basically have you register a couple of different ways. You can call the office at 703-698-7117, or you can register online at rozellecare.com. Screen halfway down, and basically you'll see the click that says register for Dr. Browning's lecture on myofascial networks. So hopefully you'll turn in for this great lecture. But let's get back onto the topic so people know what they're going to be signing up for Wednesday. Dr. Browning, myofascial networks. First of all, what is fascia and what is a myofascial network?
Well, the myofascia is all the connective tissue that basically holds us together. It's more or less a contiguous structure that wraps around our muscles, our organs, our bones, everything in the body. So it's extremely important to give us integrity, and it's certainly a big pain generator for a lot of people, especially folks that have chronic pain that might not be resolved.
So we find fascia, that kind of network, or I always refer to it as like the body's saran wrap, because it kind of holds us in place, and if it gets tighter and tighter, it kind of starts to make things difficult to move and everything. We find that everywhere in the body, correct?
That's correct. And it's extremely important to give us our upright posture and give us integrity. And it's also really there to transmit energy, to make us more efficient when we move.
So when one side of the body moves, the fascia kind of helps to connect it with the other side and vice versa?
Absolutely. It gives us the ability to conserve energy. So it works almost like a slingshot. So as for example, a baseball pitcher, when he goes into a windup, he's more or less using his fascia to accelerate the pitch and throw the ball. So it makes us extremely efficient when we move and stand, and, you know, just gives us integrity overall.
So since that fascia is kind of connecting everything, it's essentially also bringing in connection, the muscles, the joints, other parts of the body as well too. So that's why it's so important to make sure that it gets addressed when we come up with treatments like chronic pain, like you mentioned as well.
Yeah. So, you know, myofascia was really kind of the redheaded stepchild in physical medicine for a long time. In other words, we just didn't think it did much. We just thought it was a protective wrapping around our muscles. But, you know, within the last 20 years, it's gotten a lot of light. Specifically, there's a congress, a fascial congress of doctors that meet every year to talk about its importance. So we're starting to see it being talked more in conventional medicine, and certainly what we do, we talk about it all the time, but it's good to see that we're seeing more folks talk about the importance of the fascia and certainly different ways to treat it.
So when we talk about fascia and pain issues, especially like whether there's like chronic inflammation or joint pain and stuff, when we're talking about that, do we need to take into consideration all those attachments, or is it just you treat one area and it takes care of the whole thing?
Yeah, I mean, it's very hard to dissociate all of the connective tissue in the body from the different problems. In other words, if a person has a knee problem, we can't just look at it solely as maybe a problem in the joint. We certainly have to look at the muscles that cross it and absolutely need to address the fascia that surrounds it. So you really need to look at the body as a whole unit if you want to get great resolution as far as chronic pain and definitely in acute situations as well.
Well, one of the things that I always thought was interesting about it is, unlike the bones and the joints, you can't really image fascia. You can't see it on an X-ray or MRI, but you know you can identify the other structures in there. So how does one start to kind of identify whether or not it may be more of a fascial issue versus a true joint issue?
Well, the things that I look at certainly is upright posture. When a person has poor posture, you can go ahead and assume that their fascia has remodeled itself over time to accommodate that posture. Palpation, you know, you as you touch the skin or you feel the muscles, do you feel rigidity in there? Do you feel knots or what we call trigger points or adhesions? And like you said, it's really tough to image the myofascia unless the person has developed some adhesions or nodules in it. But for a lot of folks that have chronic pain, nothing's really going to show up on MRI that's going to tell you that the problem is in the fascia unless you really do a good examination.
So you mentioned two words, trigger points and adhesions, as being potentially a way to kind of, you know, a location for them. So most people would have probably heard of that. So are we also talking about adhesions that, say, might be post-surgical, or is it just based off of a trauma?
It absolutely could be post-surgical. You know, anytime we do any kind of surgical intervention, we're really keeping our fingers crossed that the body is going to heal that tissue and regenerate it to the status that it used to be. And for some folks, their immune system is not great, so they lay down scar tissue instead of good, healthy tissue. So I see this a lot with patients post-surgically. As time goes by, the tissues become more adhesed and more tight and scarred, which, you know, affects their mobility. And certainly these tissues are highly vested with nerves. So they might develop pain after a procedure to correct one thing, but now they have a different problem.
So I think it's funny that we talk about movement and the way that fascia tends to, you know, it has to move. It's going to kind of compensate. It's going to kind of do everything in opposite. But at the same time, too, so when patients post-surgically, especially are doing things like physical therapy, or they're coming in for cold laser or other types of things that are going to work specifically on that area, do we think just about that area? Do we start looking beyond that? Or about how long after a surgery does someone tend to need care like for it?
Well, ideally, you're going to get the care almost immediately after surgery. And for that reason, now you see it classically, let's look at a hip replacement. They have that patient up and walking the same day, where 25 years ago, that person would be lying in a bed for several weeks. So we now know that movement is essential for the repair process. In other words, as we move, the tissue is going to acclimate to that motion and it's going to become stronger. And that's the way, you know, our body responds. You know, if we don't move, then tissue is going to shorten. It's going to get weaker. And correspondingly, we're going to lose function. So movement is essential after any kind of surgery. And for most people who have chronic pain, just movement is a good therapy in itself.
So those different area points where someone might feel the pain, if they say, okay, it hurts here when I touch it, that might be like where a trigger point might be. But then we look at the referral pain patterns and everything else where there might be issues much further along on the opposite side that we have to address as well.
Absolutely. So you hit it right there. The interesting thing about a trigger point, and for those folks who don't know what that is, a trigger point is more or less a hyper irritable part of the muscle, usually in the bigger part, what we call the belly of the muscle. So it's kind of like a knot. And when you push on it, it may cause pain where you're pushing, but often it'll cause pain quite far away from that area. So it's called a referral pattern. And there's several textbooks that illustrate these referral patterns. And I honestly believe it's an understudied area as far as people who have chronic pain. We have a tendency to focus on the area that's involved, and very often we miss the problem, which might be, you know, pretty far from that area.
And I know you're going to cover this a little bit in the lecture, and we're going to give everybody the information on where to register again in just a moment. But when we think of that tissue as well, too, even though it kind of looks like saran wrap and kind of bands of thick white tissue, if you look at it anatomically, right? There's a lot more going on within that tissue. There's a lot more signals and nerves and chemicals kind of going back and forth that they're giving the body much more information than it just laying there and doing nothing.
Yeah, it's the fascia is highly vested with nerves for pain and what we call nerves for proprioception. Proprioception means the ability to know where we are in space. So for the most part, it's a structure that gives us, like I said, that upright integrity, but it also lets us understand how we move and where we are in space. So it's very, very important. You're not going to find people that have great balance that have poor fascia. That's just, it just doesn't happen. So we need to think about it outside of just the pain paradigm.
And when we think about treatment then, and you bring up balance, then different types of exercises or things that we do to help with balance and posture would be a real basic way to start working with fascia, even if they didn't have an issue.
Correct. You know, procedures that lengthen the fascia, that take us through just normal movement patterns, what we call cross crawl, the opposite arm and leg moves together. These are all normal movement patterns. But if we have poor fascia, then it's going to impede that ability for us to move. So it becomes really important to look at that. And, you know, I see this a lot with people who have, you know, chronic shoulder issues. They might just have a lot of fascial restriction that doesn't allow them to swing their arm. And when you watch them walk, you'll often will see it. So if you free the fascia up, then you free up the joint. And a lot of times that just fixes the problem.
Okay. And so when we do this and we see someone kind of come in, they may be, like you say, complaining of stuff that chronically doesn't go away, or chronic pain, or just issues that is just not getting better with normal therapies.
Correct. You know, so you're definitely going to look at the underlying structures as far as the joints and the muscles, but you're definitely going to have to assess the fascia itself, because you just can't tease them out. You can't make them separate because they're all in together. So a comprehensive approach is going to look at all of those levels.
So myofascial networks and myofascial pain and everything that we need to know about them is going to be what Dr. Harlan Browning is going to be presenting on in his webinar this Wednesday, November 4th at 7 p.m. If you're interested in learning about this topic, there's a couple ways you can sign up. First, you can call the office and they'll take your information and your email address and email you the webinar. And you can call us at 703-698-7117. Again, it's 703-698-7117, and tell them you want to sign up for Dr. Harlan Brandon's Myofascial Network webinar. And you can also do it at home, even just right after the show's going, or even right now. You can click on roselcare.com, so www.roselecare.com. And go about halfway down the page, you'll see a list of not only Dr. Browning's lectures, but anything else that's coming up. And even if you keep going further, you can see a bunch of the other webinars and also in-house lectures that we've recorded that the different docs have done. But for Dr. Browning's lecture, go ahead and click on the register button. They'll get the same kind of information, and they'll make sure that you get sent the webinar when we definitely need to sign up for this one. It's always a good one with Dr. Browning, because essentially he knows the anatomy, he knows the physiology, and so he likes to really break it down so people really understand kind of what's going on. We're going to go to a break real quick, but we're talking about myofascial pain and everything we need to know about how it works in the body system, and we'll be back in just a couple of moments. And welcome back to Dr. Tom Rozelle Live. We are talking with Dr. Harlan Browning. He's one of the chiropractors at the Rozelle Center for Healing, and he's going to be your presenter this Wednesday night for the November 4th webinar at 7 p.m. And we're going to be talking about myofascial networks and fascia and how we use it to connect everything into the system, and it's often overlooked. Dr. Browning, we were talking, and from your perspective as a chiropractor and applied kinesiologist, and mine as a naturopath and acupuncturist, we see those interconnections that go back and forth. So sometimes it's great because we can use them to treat the same person a couple of different ways. So when do you feel like you know, someone needs the extra, say, referral over to acupuncture or needs to, like, change up their therapy a little bit, when do you start seeing the need to do something like that?
Well, you know, certainly if the person has persistent pain that just doesn't seem to be responding to, you know, conservative care, then I often will look at acupuncture. Like we were talking about over the break, when you look at the fascia, it's oriented in very much a longitudinal pattern. It goes up and down. And it's interesting when you compare the pathways of the fascia to your world in acupuncture, it really overlays the meridians in acupuncture. So when I start to see a person that has pain patterns that might mimic the pathways in an acupuncture meridian, then I certainly think that there's something there that needs to be investigated on your end.
Yeah, and there's what's interesting with the meridians is when we think the up and down way that it goes, and even we have a meridian that's an extra vessel called the girdle vessel, which kind of surrounds the middle section. I almost think of that connection between the diaphragm and the pelvic floor as well, too, which is another kind of, I guess you could say, almost like a bulk of fascia as well, too. The urinary bladder and the gallbladder bladder meridians are both ones that are kind of keeping us upright and then keeping us laterally kind of composed as well. And what there's even a gallbladder point called the influential point of ligaments and tendons and connective tissue. So, you know, even in acupuncture, they knew that that was a really important system to address that really could communicate things throughout the whole body. And a lot of those points start all the way up on the head near the eyes and end up all the way down on the feet. So it's connecting through the whole body as well, too. So they become really important. And you might use a head point to treat something that's on the feet and vice versa. So, and you're going along larger patches where there's more connective tissue, like, say, along the where we would think of like the IT band or the into the foot where plantar fasciitis might be an issue as well, too.
Yeah, and you touched on something that I think it is very important when you talked about the pelvic floor and the diaphragm. Like I said previously, the fascia is basically oriented in a linear fashion from head to toe. Most things go up and down, but we have these hard breaks in the body that basically put us into compartments. So if we start up in the skull, there's the meninges. This is the membrane that surrounds our brain. There's a tent over top of a part of the brain. So there's a hard break there. As we go down to the base of the skull, there's an opening called the foramen magnum. There's a hard break there. So it goes horizontal as we go down. Then we get into the thoracic cavity or the thoracic outlet. There's a hard horizontal break there down to the diaphragm and down to the pelvic floor. So very often you'll see issues with the fascia, not because it's the fascia that has the problem, but it's these horizontal breaks like the diaphragm you touched on, or maybe the pelvic floor that are dysfunctional. And because they interdigitate or attach to the fascia, they'll cause issues in it. So very often we'll have to assess things like breathing mechanics or head position as it relates to the thoracic outlet, because the fascia often is being tented or pulled on because of these horizontal membranes in the body. So don't want to forget those.
And what's interesting when you brought up about breaks kind of being kind of spots of interest, you know, we would see this in other areas as well too. Like when we think about the L4, L5 area where everything's kind of breaking in the lumbar area and there's transitions through the spine as well too, being more issues found there. Would you say the same thing would happen with like these little areas, with the fascia as well too, where you have the breaks that you see more issues?
Well, I think as it applies to the spine, you're always going to see more issues when the curvature of the spine reverses itself. So in the low back, we have something called the lordosis, which means that the curvature goes forward and then it reverses itself and goes backwards in the thoracic spine called a kyphosis. And then it returns in the neck to another lordosis. So inherently from a biomechanical standpoint, you're always going to have more tension where that curvature reverses itself. But you're right. You know, we have fascia that attaches throughout the whole length of the spine. And certainly when we look at the diaphragm, it has significant attachments to the back part of the spine itself and to the anterior portion in the rib cage. So, you need to look at the curvature. Or for many folks, they lack the curve, or in some people, they have too much of a curve. So we don't want to have too much of a good thing or not enough of a good thing.
That can kind of create that push and pull on the muscle skeletal system that's essentially attached to it as well, too, creating a fascia or a muscle skeletal or joint issue.
Absolutely. And again, when we look at those hard breaks, those horizontal planes of fascia, they often will slide. It's kind of like snow, like an avalanche. It shifts on itself. It slides. So the same thing will happen with the fascia.
Right. And we think about that fascia the way we're talking about, that superficial to deep fascia kind of right under the skin and on top of the muscles. But fascia really is connecting onto all the organ systems to make those breaks happen as well, too. So
absolutely.
Stuff like the diaphragm or the pericardium or the periosteum around the bone are all part of that as well. So
yeah, and they're big time referral pain patterns, too, associated with that.
We're going to take another quick break here. You are listening to Dr. Tom Rozelle Live, and we are live with Dr. Harlan Browning talking about myofascial networks. This is going to be your webinar for this Wednesday night, and we'll continue this conversation in just a moment.
Dr. Tom Rozelle Live continues now on 105.9 FM WMAL.
And welcome back to Dr. Tomozo Live. We are talking about myofascial networks, the fascia of the body, the things that keeps us together. It helps to attach everything, stabilize it, keep the energy moving. And no better person to talk about this than Dr. Harlan Browning. And he's going to be your presenter this Wednesday night for the Myofascial Networks webinar. And in order to sign up for that and to keep everything going, we're going to have you either call the office at 703-698-7117. Again, that's 703-698-7117. Or you can register online at the website, rozellecare.com. About halfway down the page, you'll see the Myofascial Networks link, and you can just click on register. They'll grab your information, and you'll receive the link on Wednesday. The other way you can get a hold of us, if you have a question for us today as well, too, because we can take your questions live, is give us a call at 888-603-9625. Again, that's 888-603-9625. I'm sure there's a lot of questions about chronic pain and different things that we've done, and even things we've discussed in the past. So, Dr. Browning, let's talk more about what makes fascial pain interesting and different and kind of complex to treat, and how it really has all these different makeups between the water it carries inside to the nervous system, and why pain isn't always just so localized to an area. It may actually have other consequences as well, too.
Well, outside of the obvious as far as the pain component, another thing that we classically see with these chronic pain syndromes, fibromyalgia, we were talking about that on the break together, is a great example, is you often develop something called autonomic concomitance, which means that the autonomic nervous system, the fight or flight and the rest and digest mechanism of the body, gets caught up in the whole process. And what happens is, as we have chronic pain, we have a tendency to trend more to the fight or flight mechanism at the expense of the rest and digest. And so for some people, then they often will show those symptoms. The digestive system becomes messed up. Their sleep patterns become poor. Maybe they become hypertensive. They become nervous. These are all symptoms of the sympathetic nervous system becoming dominant. Cortisol output becomes higher. Adrenaline becomes higher. So the end product is the person just doesn't get any restorative time during the day, and certainly not at night. They're not sleeping well. And then they develop these other types of problems that are really associated with their chronic pain, but might be treated as a standalone entity, like hypertension. You'll see people develop high blood pressure after having chronic pain. And a lot of times it's just addressed from the hypertension side as opposed to the causation side, which would be the chronic pain.
Yeah, so we're always looking at that from the triad of health, like the biochemical, structural, mental, emotional side of this. And this is a perfect example of that, because you have something that connects the whole body together, but you have these other issues and other factors that people aren't going to normally think about all the
Absolutely.
Time.
This whole autonomic concomitance becomes extremely problematic, because people will start to develop these other issues. And if they're not addressed early, then it becomes a part of them. You know, you'll see these hypertensive issues just get progressively worse, blood sugar regulation issues, you know, insulin insensitivity, all these types of things will happen when we have chronic pain syndromes.
Well, one of the interesting things too that I was just thinking about with pain is, and we tell people, you know, movement and stretching and kind of doing stuff, is if someone tends to be in chronic pain, there may be that propensity not to want to move, to not exercise, to not even get up and walk, or the inability to do that. How is that going to play in with not only the way that fascia works on the structural system, but also with these other issues as well too?
Well, more or less we're hardwired to move. And when we look at the nerves that go to our muscles to tell those muscles to contract, and we look at the nerves that tell us that we have pain, the nerves that go to the muscles are much bigger than the nerves that conduct pain. So the more that we move, we can override the pain nerves. So the fact that folks, and it's understandable when you're not feeling well, you don't want to move, but the more that you stop moving, the more you reinforce those nerve pathways specific for pain at the expense of these other nerves that tell us, you know, to be upright and to be movable and all those types of things.
Now, I know one of the things you kind of mentioned where we have changes where chronic pain kind of comes in, and fascia being one of it. Let's speak really quickly on the ability that water and hydration has on, it makes sense for muscles, but does it make sense for fascia that hydration and keeping ourselves hydrated, you know, all seasons, not just during the summertime when we think we're hot and we need to put water back into our system. But what is water playing as part of fascia and some of these issues?
You know, water is an essential component to any connective tissue because, you know, upwards of 70% of a body's connective tissue is made of water. Now, if we take it one step further, then there's also certain nutrients that are extremely important for quality tissue as well. Essential fats are important. Things that donate sulfur donating foods, because the underlying what's called basement membrane, that's the batter that makes up the connective tissue, needs sulfur. So that's why a lot of folks, when they take things like glucosamine sulfate or chondroitin sulfate, MSM, these all donate sulfur and it helps to build quality tissue. So there's some value in that. And as you said, there's just so many people that don't drink water and they drink things that are dehydrating, coffee, sodas, you know, things that are high in sugar, they dehydrate us.
So what's interesting is the supplements that you just mentioned, you know, some people might think of that, oh, those are the ones that are going to help my bones and my joints. So again, we're going back to kind of treating not just one part of the body, but everything else is connected to it in order to create a better functioning body.
Yeah. I mean, you definitely need to look at the diet that the person has. Usually the diet for people who have chronic pain is very poor. So they don't get all the raw materials they need to build good quality connective tissue. And the one thing that I see is the ratio of omega-3s, that's the good fats, to omega-6s, and I'll call them bad fats. I mean, they're not really bad, but if we have too much of a ratio of 6 to 3, then the person just doesn't have good fluid tissues. And those omega-3 oils, they help to lubricate our joints and things like that, and they reduce inflammation. So super important to have a good diet.
Yeah, when I look at it from a Chinese medicine perspective, what's interesting is different things like water, and I'll talk to them about the different types of fats, or you're getting foods that have good fats in them. You know, they're both of those lubricating substances. They're yin substances. They're there to nourish versus create a bunch of movement. So yeah, we kind of go back and forth, or I'll talk to people about how fascia is kind of like a twig that's really dried out. If you don't have that fluid in there, you can crack that twig really easily and it doesn't function right. But if you've got a twig that's been, you know, given water and it's nourishing, it's going to kind of bend like a reed. So it essentially kind of crosses a lot of different areas as well too, as far as keeping everything hydrated so that it can be flexible and movable. Myofascial networks is going to be what you're going to be talking about on Wednesday. And have you seen more and more, you know, research come up on looking into fascial issues over the past couple of decades and more interest in this from different fields?
Yeah, I mean, you're definitely seeing a lot more People acknowledge the fact that fascia is extremely important as far as the pain generators is concerned. And certainly, it's so important for the integrity of our whole body. So I would definitely say that there's a lot more press out there. Unfortunately, you know, on the conventional medical side, it's the same old, same old. The treatment hasn't really changed much. They do, injections and that kind of stuff, medications. So I really wish that we would see more exposure to the things that we do in the office and certainly other practitioners of physical medicine, because there's a lot of good work out there. Unfortunately, you just don't hear about it in the conventional medical model.
Are there resources that are, say, layperson could look up and, you know, the public could really kind of get a better idea of kind of what's going on? Because obviously your lecture really starts to break it down. But if they wanted to kind of see it physically or, do more research on their own as well, too, to see if they have an issue with this, is there anything that you usually refer people to, you know, gather more information?
Well, one of the seminal textbooks, at least in the last 20 years, is a book called Anatomy Trains by a therapist by the last name of Myers. I think that's really actually a good book for even the layman because it's pretty straightforward. It's not very complicated. It doesn't go into convoluted terminology and stuff like that. So I really like that book a lot. And if you want to get back to the basics, for those people who really like to dig deep, then you would go into Janet Travell's work. She was a medical doctor here at the University of Maryland that really did a lot of the background information as far as trigger points. And you can even go back even further and look at Ada Rolf's work, you know, Rolfing. We've all heard of that term. That, I mean, these people were talking about myofascia a long time ago, but unfortunately it took us, you know, 40 or 50 years to catch up on our end.
Yeah. I always think it's interesting when I have the first, I think, page in Anatomy Trains, and when I was flipping through the pictures, you know, I looked at the pictures and he'd have these different trains, we'll say, like these different structures and lines and stuff. And on the first page, he says, you know, these are not meant to be in connection with acupuncture meridians. Like he literally had to write it out because any acupuncturist looking at that or anyone who's ever seen the graph of an acupuncture meridian system would say, hey, this is like they're drawing the same lines, like they're going in the same areas. So there was that connection. But again, like we talked about earlier, between meridians and the way fascia kind of works, but just not getting the attention that it needs to many, many years later compared to when the meridians came around. So,
yeah, I mean, it's really spooky when you look at the correlation of the meridians to these fascial pathways. So, you know, the bladder meridian is obviously you're very well aware of. I mean, it parallels the spine and all those deep paraspinal muscles that hold us upright. And in Myers' book, he refers to that as the back line. So, I mean, you really could superimpose all these meridians on the fascia. And it's pretty cool to see how closely they correlate.
Now, in your lecture, you're going to be covering a lot of different information as well on, you know, kind of the different things that we look at in the office or that you're looking at and, you know, who might be a good candidate. So, are there people that think if they're listening to this radio show, you know, this isn't a topic that I feel comfortable with or I'm not aware of what's going on, that you would say, okay, you're the right one to like listen to what we're talking about?
Well, you know, when we talk about all this myofascial stuff, you really can't separate it from talking about a joint problem or a muscle problem. They're all in there together. So anytime you're looking at a pain pattern, you have to consider all of these elements. It's just that I think that the myofascia doesn't get the press that it needs. It's interesting though that you're starting to see more therapies for targeted to the people off the street. You see these people with these Theraguns. Have you ever seen those? Mm-hmm. We call them percussors. They look like little tiny handheld jackhammers. Well, that's to treat the fascia. So I'm assuming that at least the guys behind the curtain understand that it's important because now they're just going directly to the end user, the consumer, us, to sell them the product. Now, I'm going to put a caveat out there to say that with these handheld percussors, you got to be careful because there's sensitive tissues that surround all the fascia. So you can make it worse. You better know what you're doing. It's because sometimes you can hurt yourself.
How would that be, say, different than someone that says go to the gym, or they have like, you know, like the stick, or they have like a roller?
A roller.
You know, I mean, clearly you're not getting the same kind of, you know, dynamic percussion as you are with a percussor, but are there similarities? Are they different? Like, or is one not safer than the other one, but easier to not get into issues with?
I mean, I think that they're all really good therapies. I really think it depends on the person and their condition. Let's take, for example, something called a foam roller. And for people who don't know what that is, it more or less looks like the noodles that kids bring in the pool. It's similar to that, but it's more about an 8-inch diameter. And you lie on it and you roll like a rolling pin. I think that they have tremendous value. But again, if you don't do it in the right fashion, then you can hurt yourself. But I think the fact that more people are being exposed to these type of therapies is a good thing, because we're starting to incorporate them in everyday exercise. So when you go to the gym, you'll often see people before they work out, they're warming up, they're stretching, and then they're using the foam roller. So it's good stuff.
And yeah, you were saying, like, I know a lot of people will come in and ask you, like, what particular exercises can I do to strengthen or to loosen up certain issues in fascia when they have certain healthcare conditions as well too. Is that something they should be doing, say, if they are exercising before and after, or just all the time? Or,
I mean, I think it's good to do it ongoingly. Myself personally, I use a foam roller, you know, almost every time I go to the gym. But I think if most folks got into a stretching regime and used a roller, you know, two or three times a week, then they're going to keep that momentum. The problem is when we stop stretching and moving, then that tissue naturally shortens. People sit for a living nowadays. People are not as active, so they're not getting these passive stretches from their occupation because they're sitting at a desk.
Yeah. And yeah, clearly we're also seeing it later on as well, like with people being more at home and working from home, they don't even have the ergonomic stuff that they might have had even at the office as well too. We're going to take a quick break and come back in just a moment. We're talking with Dr. Harlan Browning on Myofascial Networks. This is the Dr. Tom Rozelle Live Show.
Washington's Mall, 105.9 FM, WMAL.
And welcome back to Dr. Tom Rozelle Live. We are live via Zoom, sort of in studio, I guess you could say, with Dr. Harlan Browning, a chiropractor from the Rozelle Center for Healing. And he's going to be your presenter this Wednesday night, November the 4th. We're moving quickly through November. And we're going to be talking about myofascial networks. And so if you're interested in getting more information on this, understanding it a little bit more in detail, especially if you're someone who has chronic pain that has not gone away and other symptoms have started to develop as well too, and trying to get a better understanding of what's going on with the body, this is a perfect lecture to do that with. There's two different ways that you can sign up. One, you can call the office at 703-698-7117. Again, that's 703-698-7117, and tell them you want to sign up for Dr. Browning's webinar for this week. You can also, if you're in the office, you can just tell the front desk you'd like to sign up to, and they'll get your information as well and send it to you as well. And then you can also register online at rozellecare.com. If you go about halfway down the page, you'll see a section that says Myofascial Networks, and you can go ahead and register there. They'll get your email information and they'll send you the webinar as well too. And once you finish watching the webinar, or if you have questions along the way, feel free to contact Dr. Browning and, you know, and also make the appointment to come in and see him to really kind of review everything that's kind of going on. If you're interested in these types of webinars and when we were doing in-house lectures, which hopefully we'll be able to continue to do going into next year, along on the website where you register, you'll see actually a lot of the different webinars that have been done by the other doctors, including Dr. Browning and myself, throughout this year. And some of the ones we've recorded that was in the old office as well too. I think there's 21 lectures now that are online that are free for your viewing knowledge. And that way you get to learn what different things we see in the office, different approaches as well too. So it's a great way to kind of get connected with the Rozelle Center for Healing, to listen to not only the different presenters that you hear on the radio station, but also to see what they talk about when they go more in depth and ask them any questions that you might have as well too. And of course, if you're looking for these recordings or want to tell other people about them, feel free to check out the YouTube channel for Dr. Tom Roszell Live. And you can go back multiple years to listen to radio show recordings. If you miss the time as of today because of the time change, everyone who listens to us in Arizona, you didn't have to worry about that. But if you missed it, you can basically go to the YouTube channel. It should be up in a couple of days, along with, like I said, numerous years of ones. Dr. Browning, what should everybody remember if they had a take-home message about myofascial networks, and give them a little preview about what you're going to be kind of covering in the webinar?
Well, in my webinar, and unfortunately we can't do this in person, because I really like to do most of my presentations in person, because if you don't answer questions along the way, then people get left behind. So in this presentation, I try to do my best to lay out the basic concepts in the anatomy and physiology of the fascia, because if you understand the mechanics of the body, it really makes it easier to put into place things to fix it. I'm certainly going to touch on different types of therapies that are very effective, and I'm certainly going to touch on some of the nutritional components. See, when we think of chronic pain, or pain for any matter, we often don't think of the nutritional side of it and how important that is. So I'm going to touch on that. So hopefully by the end of the presentation, people will have a lot of take-home information that they can put into place. And certainly I'm there to answer questions. You can call the office or you can email me, and I'll try to get back to you as soon as I can to answer any questions that you have.
I know one of the great things when I've seen you present on this before, back when we were doing the big Ageless Health weekends and stuff, which would have been coming up or already had passed, because we did that in October usually, is when you presented on this, you did a demonstration where you took members of the audience and you had a big rope, and you had everybody hold on to a piece of the rope. And if one person went the other way, they pulled back and forth, and they were kind of demonstrating how that fascia connection, one side kind of affects the other side and vice versa. And it was, people got it, you know? So yeah, definitely if we can do some of that stuff back in office again, it would be great. But I definitely think that proved that it wasn't just treat one area of the body. You have to consider everything else, and even these underlying other systems like the nervous system having a play in there.
Yeah, it's really big picture stuff. And again, for some folks, it's something as simple as just getting them up and moving. Just many people are just, they're so sedate, and they just spend so much time sitting that once you get them up moving around, not only does it change their pain pattern, it changes their brain chemistry, and now their physiology becomes better. And so, you know, often they'll start to fix issues outside of their pain. They'll start to fix their blood sugar problems or their hypertension, you know, all these other things just by getting up and moving.
So really that myofascial network is the network of the triad of health, where we look at the structure, biochemical, mental, emotional all together, and just try to, you know, piece together the cause and what's going on and why is someone not recovering as well as they could.
Yeah, I mean, you're right. When you look at that triad of health, that chemical, structural, and emotional component, the fascia really probably does, you know, hold that triangle together, because when we have issues on any sides of the triangle, it's going to impact the way the fascia moves and the way we stand and do all the things that we do during the course of the day. So yeah, you need to look at all three sides of the triangle.
Well, hopefully the good thing is you'll have plenty of chances to ask Dr. Browning more questions, and as well by registering for the webinar this week. And, you know, not only is there some great resources in there as well, like Dr. Browning was mentioning, the Anatomy Trains book, and some of the nutrition that doesn't get covered very often, but it might start to open up other additional issues of what's going on. Thank you for listening. We're going to be out in just a second, and Dr. Roszell will be back next week for the Dr. Tom Roszell Live Show. Thanks, and have a great weekend.